Good morning and welcome in the name of Christ. We are so glad that you've taken the time to join us this morning. Today's lesson is taken from the book of Jeremiah, chapter 31, verses 31 through 34, where God tells Jeremiah that he is getting ready to make a new covenant with his people. There was a time in my life when I became very interested in forging and blacksmithing. I bought a thick book on blacksmithing history and practice, and I will always remember what it said on the very first page in that book. It read, "Old is not necessarily outdated. New is not necessarily better." Reading this put me in mind of one of the most effective marketing devices ever conceived of, the word new. Print the word new on the label of any product, and it is sure to boost its sales. We just seem to love anything that is new. Hardly a day goes by that we don't see something new to want and to then purchase. And with the advent of the internet and the hours that people now spend surfing the web, we see even more things that we think we just can't live without. Just think about a few of the things to hit the market in the last few years. The Apple Watch. Computers linked to the internet like Siri and Alexa that talk back to us and follow orders. The iPhone X, which cost a staggering $1,000. All-terrain baby strollers. Cars that can parallel park. Have built-in radar and can even avoid collisions by themselves. Technology is a wonderful thing, and it is all around us. It has made our lives more productive and easier in so many ways. Many mundane chores that we once had to do by hand are now being taken care of for us by machines. They wash our clothes, open doors and windows for us, turn appliances on and off remotely, adjust the temperature in the room, and even vacuum the floors in our homes while we're away at work. Why, we can even dial up our refrigerator on our cell phones while we're at the grocery store and link to the built-in camera and see if the jug of milk is almost empty and if we need to bring home some more. And all of these machines are controlled by onboard computers. And our computers continue to become ever more sophisticated. Artificial intelligence, or AI as it is commonly referred to, used to only exist in the realm of science fiction stories. But now it is becoming a reality. Machines are now becoming capable of making some decisions on their own. And this is sure to raise some ethical questions for our society that will have to be addressed in the very near future. Let's just take the example of our automobiles. For most of us, our cars are the second most expensive purchase we will ever make. Our cars are an extension of our personal space and our personalities. Every year, the onboard computer in a new car controls more and more of what your car does while driving down the road. When computers were first used for automotive applications, they simply controlled things like ignition timing, acceleration, or oxygen ratios. But now, most new cars come with cell service, OnStar, and internet access, touch screens, backup cameras, and radar as standard equipment. Their computers not only control many of the automobile's functions like climate control and so on, but can also parallel park, steer the car around obstacles in the road, and stop the car to avoid an accident. Experts in the field suggest that we are not far away from the era of the self-driving car. In fact, several of the major automobile manufacturers are already testing prototypes. We are also told that self-driving trucks, trains, and ships are not far off, which, when perfected, will put thousands of people out of work in the transportation industry. But all of this new innovation has produced something else as well. It has created a whole new set of ethical problems that formerly did not even exist. And now, as I said, we are going to have to find ways of dealing with all of these new problems our new technologies will create. Take the medical field, for instance. Life and death used to be fairly simple and straightforward for doctors to determine, until medical technology advanced to the point of being able to keep a person alive on machines long after their bodies could no longer function on their own. How then, in this day and age, do we determine when death occurs? When breathing stops? When the heart stops? When there is no more brain activity? You see, our technological advancements have added a whole new layer of ethical problems that now must be dealt with that formerly did not exist. Likewise, when cars start driving themselves, they will also be required to make difficult ethical decisions that were once made by their operators. Just consider some of the situations that could arise. If an obstacle suddenly appears in the road, should the car simply stop or maneuver around it? It will have to decide. It will have to choose. What if there is not enough room to stop? What about the other cars on the road? Will the insurance companies get to weigh in on how the computer is programmed? If given a choice, will it have the power to determine which car is the least expensive to hit if it must hit one? So that the insurance company can avoid or hold down its liability? What if the car must choose between hitting 5 people standing in the road or 2 people walking on the sidewalk? Is the car to treat all lives equally? Or will there be parameters based on age and sex to help the computer determine which life has priority or which life is worth more? When we gain the ability to program ethical choices into our computers on our cars, whose ethics do we use? Does the car company get to decide what ethical choices the car will make? Will the owner of the car get to choose how the computer makes its ethical decisions? Can the owner of the car choose a setting that will cause the computer to value the owner's life above the life of, say, a pedestrian? Or of other drivers using the same highway? If I am the owner of a Bentley or a Rolls-Royce, will the computers in all of the other cars on the road be programmed to avoid hitting me at all costs, even if it puts the lives of those riding in other cars in danger? Do you see how complicated this begins to be? And I must ask again, whose ethical standards do we use to program the computer that will be given the task of making what could be a life and death decision? Who gets to decide? The ethical guidelines we choose to use will matter. It's like the story I heard about 2 college students who were talking after they had to take an exam. The exam they were taking was for an ethics class. They had both walked up to the bulletin board to see what their score was and how well they had done on the test. One said to the other, "Hey, Henry, how'd you do on that test?" "I got an A-," Henry says. "Gee, that's great. How did you manage to do so well? I really studied for that test and I was lucky to get a C. You must have really hit the books hard." "No, not really." "Well, how did you do so well then?" "I cheated." Or the story I read about one of the partners in a law firm teaching a new intern about ethics. "Here is an ethical question for you, Ben," says one of the lawyers talking to a new hire. "Consider this hypothetical situation. One of our clients walks into my office with a question. It's a fairly simple legal question, and I give him a straightforward answer. He's only in my office for about 10 minutes. He thanks me and says, 'Okay, how much do I owe you?' I tell him that the fee will be $100. Well, he gets a bit upset at this and tells me that my fee is outrageous. but yet he agrees to pay. He reaches into his wallet, pulls out a $100 bill, shoves it into my hand, and walks out of my office. However, when I try to put the money into my wallet, I discover that there are actually two $100 bills that are stuck together. Now, Ben, here is the ethical question you need to consider. Since I was paid in cash, should I share that fee that I just collected with my partner or not? Well, do you see that as we move into the future, it will matter whose ethics we use? If we are not careful, our decisions can degrade into situational ethics, which suggests that right and wrong are relative and solely dependent upon the outcome of a given situation. This can result in the acceptance of many things: lying, cheating, stealing, and even murder, if they lead to a beneficial result. We don't have to think about this very long before it becomes clear that our morals and ethics need to come from a place outside of just ourselves, our political views, and our personal preferences. For us as Christians and for most Western societies, these standards come from God and the Bible. God gave us a code to live by, to guide our ethical decisions, given to Moses on two stone tablets. This was the old covenant that God gave to his people after freeing them from captivity in Egypt. I will be your God, and you will be my people. These were the terms of the old covenant. They made it clear that a relationship with God required obedience to the laws of God. The old covenant was designed to keep people happy, healthy, and safe. And if people abided by it, it worked. The problem was that most people did not follow God's law very well. Just remember the story of God giving the commandments to Moses. Before he could even get down from the mountain, the people were already breaking most of them. The old covenant wasn't working very well, so God decided to do something new. God tells Jeremiah, "The days are surely coming when I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel. It will not be like the covenant that I made with their ancestors when I took them by the hand to bring them out of the land of Egypt, a covenant they broke." God's remedy for a people who would not keep the law he placed on stone tablets was now going to be put into people's hearts. "I will put my law within them," God says, "and I will write it on their hearts, and I will be their God, and they will be my people." Verse 33. So now, we are not just governed by a set of rules. Now we are guided by God's law written on our hearts. Our choices and our decisions are now guided by God's law, God's way. A way we see most clearly in the life and example of Jesus Christ. This changes the way we think, what we do, how we treat other people, and ultimately the way we live. And none of this goes against the old covenant that God made and the rules God gave to us. Instead of being just under the law, now we are also under grace. This leads us toward a new understanding of what it means to be God's loving and faithful people. When we agree to abide by the new covenant, we don't lose the moral compass of the old one. But now God uses Jesus to eliminate the burden of our sins and to reconcile us to himself. "I will forgive their wickedness, and I will remember their sins no more," God says. This promise is made true for us by the blood sacrifice of Jesus Christ. With the death of Christ, the requirement of the law for justice has been met, which pays the debt we owe and brings us back into a right relationship with God. So, is new always better? Well, when it comes to watches, baby strollers, and cars that drive themselves, the answer is maybe. But new is clearly better when we are talking about God's new covenant with us, one that was made possible by the sacrifice of Jesus Christ. And this is why Easter is the most important holiday that we celebrate on the Christian calendar. Thanks be to God for Jesus' willingness to die in our place. Amen.